bought us so right. Are you feeling it? So loud, and it's so right. Till we're all drunk, then it's so fast, then it's all over. Go home, go sleep, wake up, get sober. What a great night. And it's so loud, and it's so right. Till we're all drunk, then it's so fast, then it's all over. Last episode of Game of Thrones this week. Well, you know, this series, this season.
Yeah, it hasn't really sunk in that I won't be doing anything come Monday.
Except your actual work.
Shut up.
You're knocking off from the watching telly and writing about your favourite show and actually have to do real work again.
Okay. So, thanks for demeaning the art of my recaps. I'm very pretentious about them.
You can't diss the recap, mate. Her recaps are really good. Like, I actually know that now. I've written one, and they're hard work, mate. They're really. What do you do, Natalie? Do you sit there taking notes during the show?
I started that way, but it's really difficult to keep up because you end up missing things in the show if you are trying to take too many notes. So I tend to try to just sit and fully sink into it and absorb it. And sometimes when you're rushing to deadline to get it in as soon as possible, I find myself remembering a lot of things that just sort of come out of my brain about, oh, and then there was this bit and this bit. Watching it with someone else generally helps because they'll sort of, you know, oh, and what about that scene? And that'll make you remember. But with the most recent episode, because that last episode of Game of Thrones is always about pushing forward towards the next season, so there tends to be a lot to take in. So I actually went back and fast-forwarded through the episode and wrote down some key notes and key moments for all characters. But mostly I try to just regurgitate and then maybe fact-check with a second rewatch or a fast-forward.
Yeah. So you do the rewind, you go through a second time.
If I can, but often I don't have the time because the whole thing with Game of Thrones, particularly with these recaps for Fairfax, was they really wanted them up as soon as possible after the episode had aired. There seemed to be this real trend of people latching on to the recap as a way of extending their viewing experience. Indeed, that was a lot of the feedback that I got and why people seemed to enjoy them was because they weren't quite ready to leave Westeros yet each week. And so they would immediately go and seek out the recap as a way of extending that. And I would often get, if it was later than expected, I would get tweets and emails saying, where is it?
My reaction every time I watch that show is, what the fuck did I just watch? I better read this thing, Natalie. She remembers all the names so I can figure it out.
It's one of those shows that doesn't lend itself to tweeting through, I reckon. Like there are some shows, The Shire, for example,
you know, that you can live tweet.
It's better. In fact, you don't even look up at the screen. And Quandra is the same. I've never actually watched an episode of Quandra, but
you don't need to.
I've tweeted the arse out of it at times. But Game of Thrones, yeah, you got to watch that. My so-called IQ box missed a couple of minutes of the episode this week. Like I missed the start, probably 5 or 6 minutes at the start. I kicked off with Tyrion and Sansa in the garden and having a moment.
Yeah.
What the fuck's this about? How did we get here? And yeah. I got no idea.
It's very dangerous to miss the first 6 minutes of an episode because two of your favourite characters will already be dead in that time.
I think I called it Roose Bolton doing his Daniel Craig James Bond impression on the Towers of the Twins, looking out over the wholesale slaughter of Stark men. I should probably point out
now you're giving
point,
me spoilers, for the recap that I haven't read yet.
Well, you know, it's your fault. Get with the times, Dan.
You know what? It's not my fault because that bloody Game of Thrones show was only available to buy on iTunes this morning.
Yeah. You know what? I think that's one of the reasons why, John, it's not a live tweetable show because it's still mostly on pay TV and people are time shifting it. So when I had a massive gut reaction to the end of episode 9, as I'm sure nobody else did, the first thing I did was just tweet, no, 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 no. That's all I could write because I was howling at the screen. And
that's not an exaggeration, is it? Like, I'm afraid, you know, Greg, he gave you up. You cried like a big, girly, crying girl.
I don't know what, like, I knew rationally that it was all going to go down at the end of that episode. It's renowned for it. I'd had something spoiled for me. I don't want to say what, but it's just the nature of writing recaps that you try and search out a detail or the spelling of a character's name and then you accidentally find out something that you had no intention because you've just landed on a wiki and it goes...
Before he was dismembered, his name was spelt such.
This is absolutely right, but when you're writing a recap, you kind of need to figure out who is who and who fits into where. So sometimes I do Google names and I try to just find the spelling of the name and then immediately click out. But I knew that it was going to be a tough episode at some point, but it really lulled me in. It was quite a funny episode. It was very humorous in parts, and there were some nice moments, and it just really suckered me in. So when all the shit went down, I was sitting in our half-renovated flat wearing a Snuggie. And not as a Snuggie, just a blanket.
A Snuggie is, it's very Westeros. Like, I can imagine, what's what they wear up on the wall, isn't it?
Yeah. Winter is coming, get yourself a Snuggie.
Get yourself a Snuggie.
Half blanket, half coat.
Your backside will be cold, but your front will be toasty warm. So when it all happened, I was just shocked and stunned, and I just started howling, like, just this primal scream of you know, horror and rage. I knew rationally these were fictional characters, and it wasn't the same as crying if, you know, someone dear to you got injured or hurt or killed or anything terrible like that.
Like me?
Sure. It was it was this destruction of hope in those characters, and you know, you wanted them to succeed and then they weren't. So it was a different kind of emotional feeling. But yes, I'm certainly very glad I wasn't on that Mashable mix-up video of the world's best reactions.
Oh, that was my favourite bit. Just laughing at all these people freaking out.
And it's funny in that situation trying to write a recap where that one was particularly difficult because I ended up just sort of staring into space in the half gloom for about 45 minutes before I could even write anything. And when I did write, it was just rage writing. I couldn't express anything intelligent or deeper. In fact, I actually got an email a few days later from someone who just read the recap saying, Natalie, would you mind writing that recap again? Because I really think you were in shock. And I think you focused on an albeit significant, but only small part of the episode. And I was like, I really appreciate the feedback, but at the same time, I think that's where most people's head would be at, is just, okay, yes, there was a whole episode, but what was that ending?
That's all anybody talked about, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, the emailer, that the nitpicker is right. It was only a couple of minutes, probably less than a minute of airtime in a 52-minute show, but it's all anybody talked about for a couple of days afterwards.
So it is tough in those circumstances because people have different ideas. The recap is one of those really quite unique modern forms of writing because you're just talking about a show that everyone's watched. And in that sense, it kind of comes across by its definition as a bit redundant. Why are you talking about something that we can see for ourselves? But it has to be...
Well, you're giving people a chance to talk about it, aren't you? It's the modern water cooler.
Yeah, I think so.
So do you piece together the episode first and then go back and inject jokes into it along the way? Or how do you approach... Because your recaps are very different to pretty much everyone else's.
Yeah, there's a lot of jokes to be made. In such a serious show like Game of Thrones, there's a lot of room there to just have fun and make jokes and, you know, give people stupid nicknames that seem to reflect their character or their appearance quite well.
I guess it does take itself seriously, so it makes it easy to knock them down.
It takes itself seriously, but I wouldn't call it a wanky self-serving show. Mm. It's just a serious show about big ideas and big concepts and magic and fire and ice and all this stuff. So you can look back at it and because it is so emotionally heavy, I think injecting that humour through a recap seems to be a good way of people digesting the episode and regurgitating it and putting a bit of context to it. So I don't really... I write my recaps quite piecemeal, so I might go, oh yeah, oh, and then this happened, and I might think of a joke and put a joke in, but then go back to what I was doing before, and it's very much like a jigsaw, you know, it all pieces together, which means at the end I have to be really careful reading through because I'll leave sentences sort of unfinished because I've got an idea for another, you know, a joke or a piece, and I go, I mustn't forget to write down that thing about Jaime Lannister and Brienne and then go, oh, but then I mustn't forget. It leads you to think about, you know, all the characters tie together and you jump from one to the other. Sorry, I'm probably not making sense about the writing process.
No, you're making total sense to me because I foolishly put my hand up to do the recap of The Biggest Loser finale.
Yeah, I read that. And I'm interested in how you did that because doing a reality TV show, it's a different beast.
Well, I always liked Ben Pobje's recaps of The Cooking Show, MasterChef.
Yeah, yeah.
But he sort of hates with an ideological passion the whole Biggest Loser thing, so he wouldn't do that. I didn't even watch this season, because I don't know, I just too busy or something. And it was also, it was a bit perverse, you know, that whole thing about parents and kids. Like it sounded like they were going to get like 12 and 13 year old heffalumps on and just torture them in that very special way that they do. So I didn't watch it, and then, so that meant the day before it went to air, I was stuck having to go to the Biggest Loser website.
Ironically, you had to binge on episodes.
I had to sit there with my big gulp of Coke and...
Your method recapping.
Liquefied donuts and just mainline episode after episode.
A cup full of melted butter.
I'm guessing, Dan, you haven't spent a lot of time on the Biggest Loser website. They could do with some coding and design advice. I pop in there to get inspiration
occasionally, sure.
You shut up. What are you Michelle's now, 74 recipes. Kilos?
No, I put on 3 kilos while I'm away. That's more than I've put on in the rest of my life.
I hate you.
All that Tasmanian cheese, mate.
Oh, yum.
I don't know how it happened. I think my metabolism's finally kicked over.
I hate you. I don't know how you would, because it seemed like your Biggest Loser recap seemed to build from the slow, and then it just seemed to build and build and build and build into this, to kind of match that editing style that they do in those reality TV shows. It was like, we'll show you this, we'll show you that.
Well, it was because it was getting later and later, and I was getting drunker and drunker and ranting more as we
stop being more like a sniper and more like a shotgun, huh?
I remember looking up because I was sitting on the couch in front of the TV, and I recorded it on the IQ box, and so I watched it cold and just made occasional notes. We got like 5 iPads here, and I had them all scattered around me, so I'd have, you know, on one iPad I had the website with the characters on it, and another one I just had devoted to Michelle and Commando gossip and. And I was just noting, writing notes, watching. And then by the time I'd finished it, I just had this word salad of notes, probably, I don't know, 1,600 words, something like that.
I mean, isn't you like Hugh Jackman in Swordfish with like 7 different monitors around
you? Yeah, no, I remember sitting there.
Halle Berry topless.
I've become distracted.
What were you talking about?
And, I quite enjoyed the experience of sort of being buried in the tech, but I do recall looking up at about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning and just saying, oh, God, this is just going to go on and on and on. I had a revelation while I was doing it. Later on this year, I'm going to convince them to let me recap Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when it comes out, because I think that'll be awesome.
Ah.
But I'm going to use dictation software, so I'll watch the show like a punter, and then I'll watch it again, but I'll do it in my sort of, you know, my headset, and I will just... Exactly the same way that you would sit there being a snarky wanker making comments. I'll just do that, but I'll have Dragon running, and hopefully by the end of the second run-through, I will have a recap.
Well, you raise a really good point there using the phrase snarky, because I think there's sort of the two sides of the recap coin, where you have some people who recap shows from the point of view of the snarking at it and mocking it and sort of saying, what was this and what was that? And there's some great stuff in that vein on the internet of various things. Often that's a lot of revisionist recapping, where people will go, I'm going to look at this old movie, or I'm going to look at this old TV show, and then just basically list the plethora of embarrassing things that happened.
It's almost like a series of semi-connected tweets in that sense. Like, I was here by myself. I knocked off a bit of wine and... was feeling pretty jolly, so I racked. What did I rack up? It wasn't Contagion. It was that Dustin Hoffman film about the killer bug.
Oh, was Outbreak. That Outbreak?
Yeah. It was fantastic.
I saw these random tweets from you about monkeys and Rene Russo.
I was watching Outbreak, and I just drunkenly started to tweet it. It was great fun, but afterwards, as I was reading through the stream, I was thinking, it reads like a recap.
Mm.
You were very fond of doing that with the James Bond films when Channel 10 was playing 2 of them a week.
And I wonder if that's because, in that way, that's, you know, in terms of whether your thing is live tweetable or not, is it something that you can more easily snark at than write genuinely about? Like, when it's something that you really love, I think you want to take a bit better care of your recap.
No, that's right. You want to write an essay, like a review essay, rather than just a bunch of smart-ass comments.
Yeah. Or a love letter.
Yeah, it's a love letter. I think that's a great word, a beautiful tribute to this thing that you love. And I think maybe that's why those recaps, you know, when they connect with readers with similar views, whether it's with the love stuff or with the snark stuff, if there's mutual snark, I mean, as you said, that's how Q&A survives, on this mutual snark love fest. Yeah, so there's sort of the two sides of the coin, the snarky recaps and the beloved favourite recap. Yeah, it's interesting. But it makes it much more easier to... live tweet something when everyone can share in that experience.
Yeah.
So I remember one of the biggest set of retweets that I got, not that I monitor these things, I totally monitor. I just remember seeing, I live tweeted the royal wedding, William and Kate Middleton. And I just said slightly snarky things like when the priest said, this is like any other wedding, this is just a young man and a young woman who are, you know, in love and want to be together. And then I think I repeated that and said, yeah, it's just most weddings, the tiaras cost $29.95 from Diva. And I had so many women just retweet, women in particular, that comment. So I think it's something, if you are able to hack into an experience that everyone is sharing.
My most successful tweet was from the Royal Wedding too, where I pointed out that I was surprised to see the bishop walking straight up and down the aisle rather than diagonally. People went crazy for that one.
Is that why you have that tweet on a shirt and that you wear around?
I've got a tattoo. Do you want to see my tattoo?
your wonky bishop tattoo.
Hey, no, actually, no, that's a different... That's not what I'm showing you. Don't call it that.
Well, I look forward to your Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s recaps then, John, because that's obviously something you're going to love.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing is, it's not one of those... I'm assuming it's not one of those shows where people will be just hammering away at the website as soon as it's gone to air. They'll wait, hopefully, until the next morning.
Yeah, hopefully. One of the things about Game of Thrones is that deadline stuff.
And also, like the Game of Thrones recaps, they're a media event in themselves. Like I wrote that essay a couple of weeks ago, and you can tell the big online media sites in the US in particular, but really all around the world, they want those recaps up as quickly as possible because it guarantees, I guess, tens of thousands of hits as soon as they go up.
I actually had a beautiful comment left on my last recap this week that said, I would watch a TV show if you were recapping it, and then said, I think that producers should get you on board to recap before they, you know, make a show because that will expand their audience numbers. And I was like, that's such a lovely, lovely thing to say, that my stupid ramblings about Theon Greyjoy's penis can connect with so many people.
I still haven't read the recap yet.
But yeah,
his penis is okay.
It's all fine. Yeah. It may just be in a slightly different part of Westeros than him. But yeah, it's nice that they've been able to take off in such a way. As I understand, a lot of recaps are sometimes done by different people.
Yeah.
So it's one show, but lots of people chime in. So there's something about the consistency. So if you're going to do Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the whole thing, then I think that will become like that event, as you say, that people will go, I've seen the show, now I'll go read the recap and see if I agree or disagree.
So, John, what lucky individual has been roped in to be our sponsors this week?
The sponsor this week is the One Pot Breakfast at Bungalow 4171. We are being sponsored by a big bowl full of sausages, bacon.
Did you tweet a picture of this on the weekend?
I didn't just tweet a picture. I wrote an homage to the One Pot Breakfast from 4171. It's amazing. I'd gone there to do the... I was doing reviews. I do the in-flight magazine restaurant reviews for Qantas in Queensland.
And I wouldn't know about that. I just see the photocopy flyers in the back of the Jetstar jets.
That's right.
I should do that. I should review or recap Jetstar food. Like, just go on with a $20 note and go, right, give me the salad wrap, give me the banana bread, and I'll review them.
Well, I flew on Jetstar last week. Now my penis is in another part of the country.
That's right. Roose Bolton's bastard is eating it.
I don't think we should be mentioning that in the same breath as the one pot sausage breakfast.
Oh, well, there's two sausages. And they're in fact, I think there's two in the photo, but there's three. The thing that impresses me about the old one pot at Bungalow, which is on, if you're looking to go there, it's on Riding Road in Hawthorne. It's about a 10-minute drive south of the city. And it's magnificent. And the reason I didn't actually end up reviewing it for Qantas is because it comes out in this quite beautiful sort of rectilinear crockery dish, but it looks like the sort of thing.
Does that word mean the same as...
Rectangular,
I think, is the word you're looking for.
Yeah.
Rectilinear is something that needs to be fixed by a surgeon.
No.
Because it's supposed to be coiled, John.
A rectangular dish. But it comes out, it looks exactly like an in-flight dish.
Oh,
although,
right.
You know, not an in-flight meal because it looks, you know, very nommy as soon as it lands in front of you. So, I'm not going to review that, which meant that I had this meal that I'd eaten and photographed and made notes about. So I ended up doing an essay about it because it's magnificent.
A love letter.
Yeah.
Well, so, now yes. I'm hungry.
Yeah, you'll have to wait, unfortunately, because it's, you know, it's breakfast.
Yeah. Breakfast should be an all-day meal, though.
I have this theory that the measure of a civilized city is the ability to get breakfast 24 hours a day. You haven't actually made it as a city until you can serve up a big plate of bacon and eggs and hopefully some black pudding at 4:30 in the afternoon.
I had bacon and eggs up at a little cafe not far from my house, which I won't mention in case it decides to become a sponsor at some point. But it's just that feeling, you know, when you eat bacon and you haven't had bacon for a while and there's like a bacon...
I've never had that feeling.
There's like a bacon deficiency. And you can feel your bacon deficiency being lowered by your consumption of bacon. I don't know. That maybe
it's like when Super Mario gets the invincibility star.
Yeah.
It's a power-up. Bacon is a power-up for life.
It's like a little Mario becoming big Mario.
Yes, quite obviously.
And then
so.
The poached eggs is like the rocket balls that he fireballs that he throws.
Yes. So you eat bacon and you become big Natalie.
Shut up! Thank you. I was making a nice image there and you just had to, well, fine. Skinny bastard. All right. Well, I should get out of here and head to the bar or something so you guys can talk Star Trek. I don't know how
much
I can contribute to a Star Trek.
Send that nerd over. He's hanging
around.
Yeah,
all right. I'll go find him. Hang on.
Stop playing with your beakers.
They're not beakers. They're schooners, you idiot.
Oh, yeah. That's what they are. What have I missed? Miss anything? Is that Natalie? That was Natalie, wasn't it?
It was. It was, mate.
Yeah, I missed her. Always miss her. We never seen her in the same room at the same time. It's eerie.
You've still got the wig on.
Shh, damn it. Right. It's a merkin.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Speaking of penises being left in the wrong place.
So...
Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah, I saw it.
That's a dangerous place to trek into.
Yeah, have you guys seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Definitely. And you know what? I loved it. I had such a good time watching it.
No?
What's that called? Greg, counterpoint.
I thought I liked it. I watched it. I came out going, bam, boom, kick, shunch, kiss, boobs, yay, explosions. And then the more I thought about it, the more I went, why? It would have been fine. Obviously, it's big spoilers. It would have been fine if it hadn't been who it was. Can we say who it was? Are we allowed to say who it was? Can we say...
We've already spoiled the shit out of Game of Thrones.
Oh, about Sherlock.
Yes, yeah, him. Yeah, that's right. Mr. Cumberbatch. Cumberbatch. You know that supposedly his fans are called Cumberbitches?
No, I did not know that.
That's good, isn't it?
Cumberbitches. Come to me, my Cumberbitches. But then again, his actor lovey name is Benny Thundersnatch.
What the fuck is a lovey name?
Supposedly, a lot of these actors sort of get together and they give each other these kind of fey names for each other. You know, hello, darling, how are you? Oh, thank you, darling, I'm doing very well. Oh, Benny Thundersnatch, you're wonderful. That sort of stuff. They sort of put on these airs and effects. And that's his lovey name. For people like Kenneth Branagh and other actors of that ilk.
So what was your problem with the Cummerbund?
We're going to say who he is, okay? So we're going to spoil the living hell out of that movie. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, okay, let's start the red lights flashing and that's
We've
right.
We've already got our sweet cash from the sponsors.
That's right. Let's just.
We don't care if you listen to the rest
of it. Okay, so I'm just going to say it in one word. I had to do that.
Oh, I'm glad I was wearing headphones for you to do that.
He just didn't have to be Khan. I just felt that you kind of bring this character and you go, this is Khan. And you go, that means something to someone who knows old Star Trek. Because the first movies had no connection to the first the reboot. Had basically no connection to the old stuff.
Can I point to the elephant in the room? Or maybe it's a gorilla in the room. Which is it? Elephant? Gorilla?
Is it a 200-pound gorilla or is it an elephant?
It's an elephant in the room.
Elephant? Okay.
Okay.
Yep. He doesn't look like a Khan.
No. But maybe that was the point. Maybe they were going, he's so genetically engineered, he's just kind of having to be skinny and intellectual and make you... I mean, he looked really scary. Like when he looked at people in the eye, you go, whoa, that guy's got some serious madness going on there.
Mm.
And he looks like he could... If he could use his brain, he'd melt your head off.
So it's been a really long time since I watched Star Trek II Wrath of Khan.
Christopher Lloyd? No, Wrath of Khan. He comes from an episode as well. Wrath of Khan is the answer to an episode where Khan first turns up. So in the eugenics wars, just very quickly, of course people know this. In the eugenics wars in like 2000, basically now, I think it's year 2000, well, in the past for us now. Yeah, there's all this sort of desolation on the planet Earth, and most of Earth is destroyed. Which is the interesting thing about the Star Trek universe. For the Federation to be created, our civilization had to be much atomic out of nothing, basically blown to pieces. And he's called Khan because he ruled Asia. He was the Khan. He ruled a third of the planet. And then he buggered off in the Endeavor, I think it's called.
It was because they gave a great speech about the name of the ship. And they got it completely wrong because they were talking as though it was in the First Fleet.
Yes.
But of course it wasn't.
It is. They know nothing. And he buggered off.
It's like the Simpsons episode about Australia. They got it wrong.
The boot. He buggered off with his genetically modified friends to start a new world. And because he was a horrible criminal, and he was out there doing his thing, and he gets happened upon by Kirk, who destroys everything and ruins everything. So Wrath of Khan, the movie, is about, well, strangely enough, what Khan does to get back at him, which is kill his son and get blown up, and his wives get killed. Oh, bad shit happens all over the place. So that means something. To someone who watches Star Trek like me, I know who Khan is, and so I expect a lot more Khan-ness from him. Now, if you don't watch Star Trek, if you didn't care, which is, if your eyes have been glossing over the last 2 minutes, gentle listener, then really, why call him Khan? Why not just go, they could have just said he's a genetically engineered guy that, like Khan, you know, because he not call him that, and just go from there. And you go, well, that's a scary bastard. His name's actually John Harrison. He's genetically engineered. He's terrifying. Go. That was my problem. There you go. And the fact that if you're parked next to the Earth and your whole spaceship is shut down... No, they were parked next to the moon in orbit around the moon, and your moon's right there, and then they get shot, and the next minute they're falling into the Earth's atmosphere. As an astrophysicist, my brain hurts. That's all I have to say. But I
shouldn't. Why? Well, they've got those big engines.
But they were down. They were dead. The engines were dead. She'd been blasted to pieces. She was running on nothing. Kirk had to go and kick the crap out of the crystals. He had to kick his engine into life.
There's still gravity out there, though.
But why didn't he fall towards the moon? The moon was right there. It was like they were like it was really weird. It was the only part I went, what? Admittedly, of course, this is talking about a spaceship that can travel faster than light.
Maybe it swung towards both of them, but the the Earth is
It was right next to the moon. It takes 3 days.
Oh, yeah, the square root of thing,
And not just that.
It
takes a long time to fall to the moon.
I fucking hate movie producers who do not pay homage to the square root of things. It's just, it fucking ruins the movie.
Inverse square law, that's the one.
You're right, I just wanted to vomit when that scene.
You're not taking science seriously.
Yeah, and I was a bit upset about this warp drive thing. I'm sure it takes a lot longer to travel through space.
Okay, fine. I will take my licks, I understand. But yeah, that was my issue with it. I enjoyed it. The more I thought about it afterwards, the more I was dissatisfied. It was like a really light and fluffy dessert, and you go, ooh, it's full of sugar and crunch. But later on, you're like, ugh, it just makes my teeth hurt.
I only had one nitpick. I accept that they're movies, and they can't be like the TV shows. Because TV shows ask questions and movies answer them. They do different things. Mm. What I had an issue with was Scotty zapped Khan and put him down. Like, he only put him down for a minute, maybe less. Mm. And he gets up and just does his Khan thing. But then when he's fighting Spock on that... sort of anti-gravity garbage scow, Uhura is just zapping the shit out of him. And it's like, he's just like, yeah, bring it on, bitch.
So he built up a resistance.
Obviously so, yes. Yeah.
I don't know how the stun technology
works.
He's
like a Cyberman in Doctor Who, that's what he is.
He upgraded.
Yes. Look, other than that, I didn't have issues with that. I know that there were some pointy-headed critics who worry that the... possibly not 1,000 miles removed from this podcast, actually, who worry that the movie is just a big, sweet bowl of ridiculous science of things ignoring sweetness. But it's a fucking movie. Like,
it's true.
What's more disturbing is, you were saying before, people who don't know Khan. There are people who don't know Trek. My daughter, who's seen some of the older TV series and has seen the movies and really likes them, was actually asking on the week, could we have a look at the first rebooted movie? Although in her mind, that's when Star Trek starts. is with the first J.J. Abrams thing. Like, she's aware there's a TV show, but that was really just something that someone did 100 years ago.
Show her Star Trek 5 and then... then everything that she sees after that will be a step in the right direction.
That's, well, not, that's not the whale one,
she,
is it?
No, she found a great quote. You know, she's got this terrible Dell laptop for school, which is good for nothing. But it did manage to stay powered up long enough for...
It's okay to say this episode not brought to you by Dell.
No. If Dell wants some love, they can kick in the sponsorship dollars. And they'll get some product placement. But until then, we will speak the truth about Dell, which is, you know, they're an abomination.
It will warm your lap, and that's about all.
And not in a sexy way.
No, not
in a
sexy
way. In a very literal way.
That's right. It'll warm your lap the way that a really nasty, possibly leprous lap dancer would do it in a threatening attempt to get money out of you.
Wow.
Hand over your roll, big
and,
boy.
And there's a fairly good chance you'll catch warmer. A virus.
She finds, I don't even know what the spot quote was, but apparently it's some awesome spot quote, and she puts it up as a ridiculous screensaver.
Mm. And it's not shows the it needs to of the many outweigh the needs of the few, that one.
Oh, I might have. Who knows? Who fucking knows?
It's oh, a that's a dangerous quote. Thing for your daughter to get addicted to early on.
And so she shows it to a couple of these girls she's going to school with. These are educated young ladies at a very exclusive private school. Like, you know, if you two had bothered to breed, there's no way knowing your kids would be allowed in there.
Well, and also the fact is, in this country, if Dan and I bred together, they wouldn't let us do it anyway. That's the problem.
But no.
No, we'd end up with some genetically altered superhero-like Khan.
With Dan's look and my brains? No, wait. My look and Dan's brains? Oh, it's doomed. Either way, it's doomed.
She hits the button, you know, whatever the button is on Dell to bring this thing up. And then she hits it again because it's fucking Dell. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
And after stabbing it for a few times, finally it sort of coughs and splutters into life and it you know, delivers up this awesome spot quote.
The pistons start working. The steam starts gushing out the back.
And these chicks are sort of looking at her, going, yeah, what's that about? And she's going, that's Spock. Do you know who Spock is? I went, no. And I went, do you know Star Trek? You know what Star Trek is? Mm. One of them goes, oh, it's a truck company, isn't it?
Yes, it is. That's right. That's what it is. Sad, isn't it? It's.
My guess is they're not worried about Khan issues.
Yeah. Fair enough. And Abrams knows that too, so he's not stupid, old Abrams.
Do you reckon he'll get Leonard Nimoy to do a Star Wars cameo? Even if she's just a character in the back of Mos Eisley's bar or something.
Do you know that he had R2-D2 was in the first Star Trek movie?
Yeah.
The reboot movie. He's actually in it when they fire up the Enterprise for the first time and they go, oh no, everyone else has been killed. Like all the other spaceships were destroyed by the Romulan sex cruiser, whatever it was.
It was a debris field.
You can go and find this shot. He actually put R2-D2 floating in space past the Enterprise. Just a tiny little one. And you go, that's awesome. That's well done. I applaud you for that madness.
Maybe it wasn't R2-D2. Maybe it was like a little one of the new MacBook. One of the new Mac Pros.
In the future, we use MacBook Pro. There was a lot of lens flare on it, so it probably was a MacBook Pro. You're right. No, sorry, Mac Pro.
They're pretty much interchangeable now.
What's that?
The Mac Pros and R2-D2.
Right.
No, they look. Oh, I totally want one.
You haven't seen a picture yet?
Oh, is it?
It's a shiny black tube.
Yeah, it looks good. It's like a bullet.
What it looks like is if R2-D2 was infected by the venom that turns Spider-Man
into
Venom.
Oh.
That's what it would look like. R2-D2 would become a Mac. Mac Pro.
I have to buy that now, John. You realize I didn't want to buy a Mac Pro, but I now must now go buy one immediately because you just told me it's the Venom symbiote mixed with R2-D2. Suddenly,
yeah, it is.
Two exciting things in my world are just mixed together.
Oh, boy. John, and you called Greg the nerdy one before. You guys are as bad as each other.
I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
I am.
It's not mine.
No, it's not mine.
I know I got it last time.
That's true. You got it last time.
I did.
No, it's your shout.
No, I think it's your shout.
Come on, John.
Fuck, it's your round, dude. It's your round. You're hanging at the back of the bar. So just bounce. Like you're banging in the back of
You have been listening to Spartacast. John Birmingham's new ebook, Stalin's Hammer, can be found in ebook format at momentumbooks.com.au. Natalie Bohensky is one of the super weapons available to the Fairfax Media Battle Fleet. You could track her down at brisbanetimes.com.au. Greg Waugh and Dan Beeston can be heard talking about science, comedy and ignorance at smartenough.org. This has been a Smart Enough Bunny production. Jennifer Lopez speaking. Where?
slam. Cause what I'm hearing so shared on the lyrical tip. Nah, I ain't feeling you, kid. We gave you something to drop, but it wasn't nothing like Bobby. We need a rock, but it wasn't.